This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Mbele on 101.9 High FM.
Let's certainly now get into the next session of our conversation. As I've indicated earlier, I'm now joined by Mr. Brooks Spector, who is the former diplomat to South Africa. And we're now talking about the Trump administration. Without any waste of time, thank you very much, Mr. Brooks. Welcome to Beyond Governance.
Yeah, good afternoon. Good to be with you. What shall we talk about?
Oh, there's just so much. Where do we start? I mean, first and foremost, what's the mood like in the U.S. after Donald Trump inauguration last week? Or this early this week, yeah?
Yeah, Monday this week. So he's been in office officially for, what, 4.5 days? Or 4 days and a little bit. Not so much. Depending on who you talk to, the mood is very different. If you talk to people who didn't like him before, didn't vote for him in November, and certainly don't like him now, their mood, if anything, is increasingly angry about the kinds of things he is doing, the kinds of what they call executive orders that have been issued that range across the landscape. If you are... importantly, if you are a member of one or another of the police unions in the United States, you have become angrier at him than you were before because of the fairly precipitate release with pardons or sentence commutations of all of the people who were engaged in that riotous action in January of 2021, where they tried to attack and seize the Capitol building to stop Joe Biden from being officially certified as president. If you are a member of what is sometimes called the MAGA, Make America Great movement, that Donald Trump has been fostering, you are happy that he is in office. You're a little bit confounded by some of the decisions that he has made, and you are struggling, nevertheless, to support him in all of the appointments he wishes to make, even for people who are manifestly basically unqualified for the jobs that they've been appointed for. If you are sitting in a government office in Jerusalem, you may be a little more cheerful about it. If you are a member of the what sometimes is now called the Silicon Valley high-tech bro or brotherhood, you're reasonably pleased because such people, the high end of those people, were very prominent at the inauguration, and he has said lots of comforting things to them on issues that are important to them. If you are in Kyiv as a government official in Ukraine, you are modestly more optimistic than you might have been. If you are sitting in Moscow, you probably are slightly less optimistic. And so it goes. I mean, this, you know, it's so early and the track record at this point is so thin that most people's preconceived notions, ideas, or viewpoints are still in place, and we're all waiting, I guess, to see whether or not actual things happen as a function of the words that have been said.
Thank you very much for that observation. If you've just joined us, I'm having a very interesting perspective of Donald Trump's administration. As we all know, that he's 4 days in office and is relatively new, but you know, he had issued over and above 200 executive orders, which that is obviously unprecedented for any U.S. president who has been in office that short. Mr. Brooks Spector here is obviously a former diplomat and a knowledgeable individual on geopolitics as well as macroeconomic issues on a higher level. And by the way, thanks for giving us different perspectives on how Donald Trump's administration has been perceived. And that I found it very enriching. But coming back to Africa, what would you say Donald Trump's foreign policy on Africa has been, we all know that when you reflect into his first administration, he was not really keen on multilateral agreements. He was passionate about bilateral agreement, of which African countries, particularly through AU, were objecting to that. Will that line of thought remain the same, or he's likely to review it?
Well, let's be honest. Africa as an idea, Africa as a collection of 50-some countries, is very low on the totem pole of interests that Donald Trump has. And remember, the administration itself is only now beginning to take shape. The only confirmed nomination is that of the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio. And in his opening statement, he talked about America being the first order of business security for the country and advancing the country's economic circumstances as the key goals. What that says to me is that there is not going to be an enormous amount of intellectual energy or political will directed toward Africa. A couple of things come to mind, though. There's a hold on all foreign aid programs until they can, quote unquote, review them. And that obviously has an effect on things like the PEPFAR program and other aid programs in South Africa. Whether they will be ended or not, it's a whole different thing. But putting a hiatus, a hold on them, means that ongoing expenditures aren't going to happen. And the other part of it, a cornerstone of policy, of course, is AGOA. And for listeners who aren't familiar with it, it stands for the African Growth and Opportunity Act, which is not a treaty. It's not an international agreement. It is a law passed by Congress that gives African nations duty-free entry into the American market, tariff-free of their products. And it expires as a law this year, later on in the year. There is some question in Washington among Republican members of Congress whether or not South Africa should be included in AGOA's list of beneficiary countries, A, because it's a middle-income country, B, because it has taken stances toward Russia, China, Iran, and footnoted now the International Court of Justice's the South African petition to that court over the conflict in Gaza. And all of those taken together are things that seem to annoy American congressmen and women, especially among Republicans. I think preeminently among them is the coziness with Russia, including senior level visits from Russia to South Africa and vice versa, such that it is possible that even if the act is renewed, South Africa may be written out of it, A, because it's middle income, and B, because of its political stances, or both, or neither. And it's just too early to tell on these things, because as I say, Africa as a continent, as an issue area, is simply not high on the agenda of what will be the Trump administration. They're much more focused on things like Middle East, relationship with China, relationship with Russia, and strengthening Western Europe's participation with money in NATO. And those are the key, the elements of what I seem to think the U.S. policy will be. But also, just late in the day, the U.S. announced it was withdrawing from the World Health Organization, and that's something that could have a significant effect on Africa, because there's lots of expertise and some funding that comes through the WHO to African nations, including South Africa. And should there be another pandemic of a different virus, that would have some real repercussions.
Those are very interesting insight, because I would have thought Trump's administration would put Africa on agenda purely because of the inroads with Russia as well as China has. in terms of minerals, you know, and based on your observation, you reckon Africa is not that much of an issue. But how does that reflect when you're looking at BRICS as an example? Because BRICS has a different tone, particularly in the context of how North and South ought to deal with. And I'm sure, and we've picked up through media that Donald Trump is not particularly happy with BRICS, particularly on issues such as the move away from the dollar, even though it may not necessarily be something that happens now, but it has to, the seed has been planted and it might gain traction, perhaps maybe not in the short term, but certainly in the medium to long term.
Well, first of all, I don't think BRICS as a notion, as an entity, figures very largely in Washington at all. It didn't previously, and I certainly don't think it will happen during the Trump administration. You are right, however, to point out that the minerals issue, the trade issue, is important, but that is less so. I mean, let's put it this way. The individual countries and the trade or export of minerals is seen more as more important than the continent as taken as a whole. But, and a footnote here, and I think you're leading into it, the competition globally with China is playing out rather strongly in Africa, and that is commercial and trade driven rather than in a major sense political activities or certainly military activities. And I think that you'll see in the offices that deal with trade and commerce lots of attention to the way in which exports of those important minerals are handled vis-a-vis the United States. I think, for example, the Lobito Corridor, which you didn't mention, but which I think your listeners should pay attention to, that comes from Zambia through to an Angolan port to export those minerals, was important for the Biden administration, and I suspect it will continue to be important in the Trump administration. But it's a partnership between governments, private industry, and investors, rather than simply a direct U.S. Project by itself.
Interesting observation indeed. Let's take a quick break in a second. I just need to make a follow-up with Brooks, my esteemed guest, who's giving us his insights on the what is happening with the Donald Trump's administration in the context of geopolitical environment as well as economic policies. We'll be back in a second.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Mbele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. You're joining us. I'm having a very interesting conversation, eye-opening conversation, even my end. I'm joined by, Brooke Spectra, who is a former U.S. diplomat, who obviously has very close relationship with South Africa as his career stemmed in Africa and in the East, so to speak. He's a well-known individual, including a lecturer at the university, consulting in environment. So I mean, Brooks has all accolades that you can think of, and it is such a pleasure in having this conversation with him. If you join us, please, if you've got any thoughts or questions that you want to raise, I'm sure you'll be more than happy to respond to those questions. Our WhatsApp line is 061-895-1019. And of course, your views and thoughts are welcome by my X handle, which is _@DrMbele. As we proceed, Brooks, we obviously, it's too early to say in terms of a Trump administration. And one thing that is nagging the world, and which is one of the executive orders that Donald Trump has already activated, is that of withdrawal from the Paris Agreement, one would argue that some of these issues are evidence based or scientific driven. To what extent do you think Donald Trump apply his mind on evidence, because climate change has been literally on the forefront of every major news platform we've seen, even in the States now, in Florida, the wildfires, rains and hurricanes, you name it. And here's the president that reckons pulling out of Paris Agreement is a solution to the U.S. Your take on that?
Well, I mean, quite sadly, in his first administration, which ran from what the year 2017 to 2021, he was very clearly opposed to the very idea of human-induced climate change. This time around, he has basically been no different. He says, in effect, and uses the word, it's a hoax, which means that it's a lie, it's a travesty, it doesn't exist. You and I and most of our listeners listening in now probably believe he's wrong, and the evidence supports that supposition that human-induced climate change is real and it's with us. One of the hallmarks of the Trump administration coming in is going to be an increased attention to the use of fossil fuels, coal, oil, natural gas for the fuel of electric generation, rather than shifting to renewables and things like solar and wind and tidal energy sources. That's a great shame. And if you live in a place in Africa, in many parts of Africa, or if you live on a small Pacific island, you look at the possibility, literally, in a few cases, your country will vanish if the sea level rises by less than a meter. You essentially won't have a country left. So, for a lot of people, this is a fairly existential question. If climate change forces large migrations of people in desperation from formerly agriculturally successful areas in Africa that have become dust bowls or too hot to grow crops or lack of rain, that's going to be a large global question rather than simply a small national, quote, small, quote unquote, national or even regional question. But Donald Trump seems oblivious to this and, in fact, is antagonistic to it. And I think something of the same logic that applies to the World Health Organization and the Paris Agreement applies. He does not see the benefits directly to the U.S., and the costs are disproportionate. And if that's true, in his transactional calculations for policy, that means move away from the commitments of the Paris Accord, move away from giving over money to the World Health Organization, let other people pay for it if they think it's necessary. It may be a shame, it may in fact be self-defeating, but that's where he is now. And I don't think, at least among the people whose names I have seen so far being nominated for positions, there is anybody in the economic or foreign affairs areas who is a cheerleader for dealing with climate change or for dealing with renewable energy sources or shifting away from fossil fuel. That's further a shame.
I couldn't agree with you more. If you have just joined us, I'm having conversations with Bruce Spectrum and giving us his insights and observations on the Donald Trump administration and what it means for the Americans and what it also means for the world. I couldn't agree with you more that it's still early for us to make any determination. 4 years, obviously, we'll see how everything unfolds. Your parting shot to South Africans, who obviously look at Donald Trump administration either with excitement or with EU, particularly in the context of what Cyril Ramaphosa just did yesterday, was signing off the long-awaited expropriation of land into expropriation of land without compensation into law. Your final observation and what it means for Americans who have properties in the country, And the extent to which that might sway even Donald Trump to look at South Africa differently, particularly in the context of AGOA and its proximity to China as well as Russia.
Yeah, well, I'm not a serious deep student of South African domestic politics, and I haven't really had a chance to digest the full content or extent of the Expropriation Without Compensation Act, other than headlines. But I can say this, that it will probably, just the passage of it, just the signing of it, probably will be seen by Republican senators and congressmen who are already antsy, already unhappy about South Africa's views on foreign affairs. They may well see this as yet one more stick to beat South Africa with when it comes to the discussion about AGOA eligibility. And like everything else, the secret is really in the details. I really don't know how this would affect, say, let's say for the sake of argument, an American couple that bought a game farm somewhere in Mpumalanga, which there are contestations about land reform and whether or not that might be a subject of expropriation without compensation. If one or another of those kinds of things does happen to an American land owner, that's logically going to get more attention, more airing with the Republican administration than it might otherwise, even though Americans should understand that the laws about land ownership in a country, in this case South Africa, are South Africa's laws rather than the laws of the United States that might apply. You'd probably see people go to court for compensation. There would be long legal arguments. I probably outlive my life. But if you bought a house in a city in Johannesburg, I don't think the law particularly applies to that. So I think I'm safe at least.
I like that observation. Yep.
So, I mean, I do think it's going to take quite a while before people figure out what exactly this new law, now that it is signed, actually means for somebody who owns, say, a productive farm or a productive game farm or a productive animal sanctuary or, you know, almost anything. And we're just going to have to sit and watch and wait and see.
Yes, indeed. Unfortunately, we had a run of time, Brooks. Thank you very much for your time and your insights, which we thoroughly enjoyed. Hopefully, it has sort of broadened our horizons and deepened our understanding of what to look out for in the context of how Donald Trump's administration is going to play out in the geopolitical space, and as well as how South Africa and U.S. Policies will be aligned or misaligned based on what you have recently pointed out to them. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
You take care. And can I just tell your listeners, most weeks, Friday mornings at 9 o'clock, they can listen to our program, The Deep
Absolutely.
Dive.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. I'll certainly ask my producer to make a follow-up with you. I found your insight intriguing and very thought-provoking at the philosophical level, but also at practical level.
Okay.
I really appreciate it. Yeah, that was Brooke Spectra, who is a former U.S. diplomat, who is now based in South Africa, giving us very interesting and deep analysis of what the Trump's administration means for the U.S. and what it means for the globe. Let's do this again next week. It has been an absolute pleasure. Do yourself a favor. Be kind to the next person, for it does not harm. Let's do it again next week. As I pointed out, Shalom.